This episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast is brought to you by our new sponsor, Oakley. When you wear Oakley, there really is more than meets the eye. Don't trust me? Try it for yourself. I've worn a lot of sunglass brands in my life, and I can assure you that Oakley is not just the best looking, but the best quality out there. Head on over to Oakley.com for more information today.
Hey there, Knicks fans.
How you doing?
It starts earlier and earlier every time I pod with you. Just can't even get the words out. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Joining me today is someone that I have not talked to since the Knicks season ended. It feels like it's been a month since the season ended. It has not been a month. It's been 10 days, I think. Something along those lines. Benji Ritholtz. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. You made that sound like you haven't spoken to me like at all. Like we just cut ties in the off season. Knicks basketball is the only thing that brings us together. And once that ends,
that's it. For you.
I hear.
We talk. I'm thankful that we get a chance to talk and bullshit every day. We have not talked in front of a camera that is recording the things
that
we are saying. So it's good. It's good to do this. A little behind the scenes. This is going to be a slightly shorter episode than we usually do because I don't know how to work a computer, and we'll just leave it at that. But we were just talking. Kind of off mic about, we haven't really talked about, the Knicks losing to Miami. And then Andrew chimed in and he's like, well, does anything else really need to be said about that? So I don't know how much we'll talk about that today, but it may come up in the context of our conversation about just the playoffs and like what we have learned and what we are learning and whether there is anything to be learned other than be good at basketball and be a good basketball team. And if you do those things, good things will happen. Before we get to any of that, Carmelo Anthony announces retirement. I don't know that I've ever had a conversation with you about Melo, which maybe speaks to how important Melo is or is not to me. But I am curious how important he is or is not to you. So I'm just going to throw it to you. What are your thoughts on Melo announcing his retirement?
I think he's important to any Knicks fan. Certainly the younger ones, I guess, I don't know, I'm younger one anymore, but like since they were good, like at 99, I was 7 years old. I barely even remember it. So for me, it's other than the current iteration of the team, it's the only success, somewhat sustained success that I experienced. So I think despite maybe an underwhelming amount of team success for a superstar like him through those 2.5-3 years or whatever it was, and then obviously the end of it was pretty awful. I think it has an outsized level of importance to Knicks fans of my age and younger, because that was the only fun times we had through 20 plus years of fandom. So yeah, he's very important. That era was very important to kind of fostering my love of the team, love of the sport. So it was, I think when he announced his retirement, I think it kind of stirred up some nostalgia and some just thinking back, and he did mean a lot. I think, we can talk about kind of who he was as a player and some of his shortcomings. He had certainly more positive attributes than negative ones. And, it was a fun few years of Knicks basketball when it was going.
Yeah. I've been thinking about Melo a lot the last couple of days because it for a lot of different reasons, but something that has struck me is not like that. It's not the fact that people are maybe saying, I don't think he should have his jersey retired by the Knicks. It is the ferocity with which people are arguing against it, to the point where it's like, oh, come on, you're going to retire his jersey. Then we, you know, like, how do you do that and not have Bernard King, or, you know, I like, or you're crazy for retiring the guy's jersey. The guy won one playoff series in his time here. And like this, it's just, it's incredible that there's that level of, I mean, it really does border on like hatred, for a player that like he was unequivocally a great player. And you just like look at, and I get it. I looked up the advanced stats today because I think that has a lot to do with it, because he came about in like right at the beginning of the era where people were really starting to pay attention to this shit. And it's like, during the years that he played, the only player who scored more points was LeBron James. And yet if you do the same sorting for like VORP or, you know, efficiency or like, you know, win shares, like he gets further and further down the list. And that's all has to do with it. Even so though, man, it's like, it's crazy. This guy, I mean, the dude, he produced, I mean, God, did he produce? And I really do feel like he has one of the more complex legacies of any athlete that I can remember watching, you know, certainly in New York, but maybe, you know, anywhere.
Yeah. What you just said kind of really struck a chord. He did come about in an era, the kind of the transition.
Yeah. On the court too. Forget about how we look at how we analyze the sport on the court too.
Yeah. And of the right. And just the way we kind of look at it. And I actually, for me, that brings about a certain degree of fondness, because the game has improved in a lot of ways and it's great in a lot of ways. I think one thing that I lament, due to the rise of analytics and the focus on it, both from the fan and the team perspective, is, you know, what kind of is like the hardenification of the game, which is when you truly only go for efficiency, almost like in the baseball, almost like a three true outcome, where it's three layup or foul shot, and you take it to the extreme, so you get what I consider kind of the ugly, worst version of NBA basketball, which was like kind of peak Harden Rockets, even to some extent. I think he's funner to watch because he does certain things in a different way. But I think Luka kind of borders on this sometimes, where it's like, it's three layup foul. And whereas it used to be, and this is where I get to Melo, it was about craft. And one thing about Carmelo Anthony was like, he was a craftsman. He was an expert at the very little things that made him so special. Obviously, physically gifted, huge, just a tremendously large, strong person, wide shoulders, a really quick jumper, not a high jumper, but an extraordinarily fast jumper. Got up off the floor so quickly, which allowed him to get so many offensive rebounds. And there were obvious physical gifts, obviously just the hand-eye coordination to shoot the way that he shot. But Melo perfected the footwork and the pivots and the pump fakes that made his mid-range game so devastating, one of the best we've ever seen. And yes, we've moved away from him, which is why one of the reasons I think his legacy is so complex is because we've moved away from that style of basketball, but not always in good ways. Yeah. Not always in good ways. And, you know, there's like accounts like, you know, Ball Don't Stop is like the most extreme version, who like he mostly just like has these ridiculous pontifications and rants that don't actually have any basis in any kind of nuanced thinking. But he does have a point at times where, because of the numbers focus and because of the efficiency focus, we have lost a bit of the craft. The craft now is more, how do I create threes or get to the free throw line? Because that's efficient. But is that what I want to watch? Right. And that's what Melo, to me, like a master, a total master of his craft. I loved watching him to learn from him. Like, this was when I was playing competitive ball. Like, there, I would go to the gym and work on some of those pivot moves and work on some of that footwork and work on that pump fake. Like, that, like, he taught me a lot because of how tremendously in tune he was with the kind of the fundamentals of scoring. And that's something that I think gets maybe overlooked a bit and that I appreciated about him.
It's funny though, because I'm hearing you talk about this and you're talking about the craft and you're talking about the footwork and you're talking about all of that stuff. And guess what's coming to my mind is a guy who just scored 80 points in the last two games the Knicks played. It's Jalen Brunson. And I'm thinking, well, so what's the difference? Well, the difference is, one, Jalen Brunson does that at a level of efficiency. I mean, look, for what he did, there weren't 10 guys in the sport that could have done what he did more efficiently than there may not have been two guys in the sport that did specifically what he did, the shots that he took. I'm talking about Melo, more efficiently than he took, because he took the toughest shots. They were only that's what he did.
Yeah.
And yet Brunson has kind of done it in a way where you look at his, we all do. You look at his effective field goal percentage at the end of the year, and it's like, my God, how is he doing this at this size? And he has those numbers. And then there's the part of it where you look up and he's like, no, he's not Chris Paul. He's, he's not Steve Nash, but it's 6 assists, 7 assists, 8 assists, 8 assists. You know, he always seems to make the right play. And then you look at Melo and the efficiency numbers were, a little lower than some of his peers. Again, as Andrew said to me when I was doing the live stream, who is he passing to? That's a fair thing. And it's side by side with that, the assist numbers. I mean, again, I think it's unfair that he came about in the same draft as LeBron James and had to measure himself unfairly against LeBron James for all those years. But like, LeBron James is going to retire with, 12,000 career assists, whatever it is. And Carmelo's like a quarter of that or whatever the number is. It's just, like you say, there's nuance to, I think, the game. There's nuance to the discussion about this player. It's just, he's a fascinating player to me. That's all. It's just, he's a fascinating player.
The efficiency numbers, I haven't done the statistical deep dive. I don't, it's just, going back 10 years looking at the stats, just not something that I've done in the last few days since he announced his retirement. I will, he's, at least I think, he led many very efficient offenses. I mean, I think, if I recall.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, and I think both in Denver and New York, and to me, it speaks to, there's more, even when you look at, even when you look at efficiency, there's nuance, right? Because
yes,
what kind of threat he provided on a nightly basis and the amount of attention that he got throughout the league. I mean, his sheer presence and threat created good offense for his teams, even not his direct assists. And you obviously look at the 2013 team and how that 2012-13 team and how that whole ecosystem operated. It was basically at its heart, it was dump the ball to Melo, wait for that double or drive into help. And then it was the swing around the 3-point line. Now, it might not have been his initial swing that got the shot, but how many, right? You could picture it in your mind, right? Copeland to Kidd to Felton for three, like all, how many times did we see it? And so, yes, his shooting numbers were not that efficient. I think, and it's fair to criticize that. But I do think he was such a constant force and threat to a defense, and the amount of attention that he constantly drew. Like, that's why his offenses, when he was at his peak, were always very good, even when his shooting numbers themselves weren't necessarily elite.
Yeah. It's, he's a guy that I feel like as a shot maker, Kobe, T-Mac, you want to put Durant in that. I'm just thinking of guys over the last 20, 30 years, but Durant goes in that conversation. He's right there,
Yep.
And so, he is thought of, I think, historically more a level down from a lot of those guys. And I think that gets into like what you're talking about. Like, should he be really? And that gets into the sad truth of it, which is that he latched on with an organization that didn't know what the fuck they were doing for much of the time he was here. And that's unfortunate, but
latched on a half a season too early. Right. Which is always the shame of it.
But that reminds, so when Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks were just having a very brief conversation about him on the last pod, I thought the best point that anyone has made is like, when this guy was a free agent, a couple of times that he, or when he was available on the trade block and then he was a free agent, like everybody wanted the guy, every smart team wanted the guy because they knew what you're talking about. It's like, you put him on, like, we'll figure it out. Just give us the guy and we'll figure out the rest later. For over 30 years, the law offices of Weiss and Rosenblum in New York City has been home to a team of award-winning, hard-hitting injury attorneys who have a long track record of seven-figure results. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, fall, construction accident, or other traumatic event, Weiss and Rosenblum will work tirelessly to maximize the award regardless of the severity of your injury and get you and your family the fair and just compensation you deserve. Call Weiss and Rosenblum today at 212-366-6100. Again, that's 212-366-6100 or visit weissandrosenblum.com for more information. No case is too big or too small. Personal attention to your matter is a priority. Once more, call 212-366-6100. Previous results do not guarantee future outcomes. If you think you might have a case, speak with a veteran attorney, not a rookie. Which is a good transition to what we're watching now. A different sport, you know, but at the same time, not really, because like, why are the teams that are doing well at their core? It's because they have, I mean, if we just want to talk about the two, well, we should say we're recording this. It's 8:07 PM. I suppose the Boston Celtics could pull off the first 0-3 comeback in the history of.
Don't let them get one. Don't let them get one, as they keep saying.
Listen, I'm sure Miami wants to end it tonight.
Oh yeah, especially with Denver wrapping it up. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, you know, it's been two teams, Denver and Miami, on the backs of two guys who are playing the sport at the highest level that you could possibly play it, and. I think it is kind of funny that they were the 30th and 40. What was Jokic? 41? Was he? I think whatever it was. I think he was 41, 42, something like that. Picks in the draft. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the playoffs? Just I'm curious where your mind is at.
Man, you know, it's been a really unique and fascinating playoffs. It's not what we're used to. Miami run. It just makes you kind of reconsider whatever thoughts you had about what makes a championship caliber team. And I think that's healthy. I think, you know, we often, when we talk about team building, we create these archetypes for championship teams and these categories of what it needs to look like and where you need to get to and how you need to play even. I don't think any of it's true. I think other than you need a lot of talent, you need a lot of teamwork and chemistry, and you need some baseline level of good coaching. Like, I don't think there are any rules, because years are very different and weird, and the league changes, the rules change, the salary cap changes. It's very fluid and crazy things can happen, and you just need to do your best to build a team with the most possible talent on it, with the best possible coaches that fits together well. I don't think there are really any other rules beyond that. You don't need X amount of stars. You don't need to play five out. Like, there are no rules. Just build a team that is coherent, that makes sense, and that has the most talent that you can put on it, and like, give yourself a shot. Like, I think that's, I don't know. It's opened my mind. I don't know how you think about it, but I think it's just really fascinating.
I think about it like, first of all, I think the most important thing that you said is the thing you kind of threw in at the end. I'm not suggesting that you don't see the value in this, but you threw it in at the end, which is the fit. And when I've watched Miami, you know, it's almost like, this analogy is going to be a stretch. I'm sitting here and I could see across from me my daughter's little box of blocks. And it's one of these things where it's all different shapes blocks. There's squares, there's triangles, there's octagons, all kinds of craziness. And that box of blocks fits in just such that everything has its proper place. There is no wasted space.
Yeah.
There is nothing unnecessary about it. There is nothing, nothing doesn't fit. And you watch Miami, are they the most talented team? God, no. I don't know. Is Miami one of the most 10 talented teams in the league this year? I mean, and that gets into a whole conversation, like, what is talent? But like, they fit so perfectly with what they're with what they've been able to do. And as you've been pointing out recently with the whole Tyler Hero discussion, the fact that all these guys who couldn't hit the far side of a barn for 82 games are suddenly hitting everything matters quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's a huge component of it, which like it's the shooting stupid. I want to come back to that for a sec, but like, and then there's the coaching, because it's like, yes, they seem to fit, but they didn't fit the way they seem to fit by accident. That's all part of a plan. And it's part of an ecosystem that had to be designed. And like, it really does. It has opened my eyes up too. But at the end of the day, you have to have the engine. And I think the engine could look different. I think you could have a two-headed engine. You could have a three-headed engine. You could have a four-headed. I mean, you could have the Pistons in 2004. More and more, I think maybe that team is less of an anomaly than has been made out to be. It's just they spread out the top tier talent across several players. However you do it, you need to have the engine. I don't know cars, but like 1, 2, 3, 4 cylinders, right? Engines have cylinders. Do you know, Benji?
Why are you asking me that question?
Oh my God. Okay. I thought maybe you knew. I'm glad that you are as ignorant about
this. Is this why you bring me on the podcast?
You get the point. The point is that Miami.
I did just see Fast 10 a couple days ago. And yet I still remain uneducated about cars.
That lets you know that the Fast franchise is not doing its job. If the franchise doesn't teach you about cars, what is it doing?
It was always meant to be educational.
Seriously, they're really dropping the ball there. Anyway, you could do it in different ways. You could even argue that for as transcendent as Steph Curry is, and like obviously he is the thing that makes that go, that was really more of a three-headed thing, because like you needed the Clay part of it, you needed the Draymond part of it. And you do it in all these different ways. But you do need the talent at the top, and then you do need the ecosystem under it. And I think what you just said is so smart, because you can build it so many different ways. And yeah, I think that is the takeaway.
Yeah, I think, Denver obviously did it in the more traditional sense, where they were the best team in the regular season. They were able to coast a bit down the stretch. They came out like gangbusters in the playoffs. They've been the best team in the playoffs. They have an all-timer.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the more, Jimmy is legendary but he's not this. I mean, Jokic is a different stratosphere of, we're talking about, if he keeps it up a few more years, an absolute all timer, pushing top 20 kind of guy.
You want to talk about advanced stats pace that he is on at this age? I mean, and yeah. look, advanced stats love Jokic, but then if you like peel back the curtain a little bit, like, okay, well, why do they love Jokic? Or is it just, do we need new advanced stats? Or maybe the advanced stats do know something, and this guy is in that, like, as you said, like top 15, 20 stratosphere of all time.
And the other beauty of Denver, though, is around him, and he's kind of, he's an anomaly. He is an anomaly in the sense of where he came from and how low in the draft he was selected, and to be this good is unprecedented from that position. But in terms of just how the team is built, but then, they patiently built this thing, like, and they have surrounded him with their own draft picks and some surrounding, some free agents, some really smart targeted free agent signings in a market that you're not going to get the big free agents, I don't think. And it's a beautifully constructed team. I don't know about you. Watching that game last, that was one of the most like pure, wonderful experiences I've had watching a basketball game. With LeBron James, putting up a 40 piece at 38 years old and trying to give it one last shot. And you're watching on the other side, just this team that plays beautiful ball with a player who is transcendent and makes others transcendent around him. It was just like one of the, it was a joy to watch that game. And it's just like, I hope Miami closes it out and we get this Denver Miami finals. Cause I think it's an awesome contrast and two teams that play really wonderful basketball. On the Denver side, it's an exercise in some patience also, and letting someone build it. It also makes me think from our own team's perspective, what that means and what you allow to happen organically, and when is the time to change, if there is a time to change from, that all. We're not going to have time to get into that tonight, and I'm sure we will at some point, but it's all an interesting study in what having a little bit of patience with the people that you trusted with the franchise can do.
So what I was going to say when you talk about the series and the game, I think that it's going to look, NBA history will mark it down as a sweep because it's a sweep. But like in terms of it was as fun and entertaining a 4-0 sweep as you're ever going to see. The patience thing is interesting. And I think that is, look, there are examples of teams that have not had patience where clearly patience was warranted, both from a, you could say from a coaching perspective, from a front office perspective, from a, you know, making rash trades and things of that. Like, look, you know, the original LeBron teams in Cleveland. I mean, you want to talk about an organization that like screwed it up every, I mean, from the moment they drafted him really up until the moment that he departed from Miami, they screwed it up 10 ways from Sunday. You know, in how they tried to build it. And then there are other examples of that. And then you look at an organization like, you know, the Spurs, had a chance to get rid of Tony Parker. I forget what year that was, but maybe they had won in 99. They beat us in 99, but I think it was before their second championship, right? Because it was Jason Kidd was still in his prime and there was all that, the flirtation with Jason Kidd, you know, eventually Tony Parker becomes an NBA Finals MVP. Is that what people, you know, foresaw for him early on? No, many people probably didn't see that. And then I personally think he deserved the look as one of the 75 greatest players ever, but I digress.
Not every billionaire has the stamina, the dedication, or the fire to become the most unpopular owner in sports. But not everyone is James Dolan, the owner of the New York Knicks. This is Reign of Error, a new podcast series that gives you a courtside seat for the controversies, scandals, and drama that seems to follow the infamous billionaire. Track Dolan's rise from aspiring musician to the throne of one of the most beloved franchises in sports. Along the way, he'll battle his own players, fans, celebrities, the New York media, politicians, even the Girl Scouts. Reign of Error unpacks the outlandish story over 5 riveting episodes, detailing how Dolan became a lightning rod of criticism in his quest to outdo his billionaire father, while also asking the $6 billion question, why doesn't he just sell the team? Check out Reign of Error wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app. What's up, Knicks fans? Super excited to announce our new sponsor, Oakley. Express your style and build a look that's made just for you. Oakley's changing the game, and it's time to discover a whole new world of possibilities. Do you run, golf, train, or just want to look like your favorite athlete? Then you need to get yourself a pair of Oakleys today. Suited for everyday eyewear with frames and lenses allowing for an extension of self and an expression of your personality, with Oakley, there's more than meets the eye. Here at Knicks Film School, our motto is look good, play good, and that's why Oakley is the perfect partner for us. Not a one of us leaves the house in the morning without our Oakleys. And listen up, because it's officially almost summer, which means you need to upgrade your sunglass game now. Check out Oakley.com to get yourself a pair today. Also, did you know that Oakley even offers prism lens technology? Now, I know what you're thinking. GMAC, what the hell is that? Well, it's a technology solely used by Oakley and available for everyday settings as well. Want to know more? Head on over to Oakley.com and check it out for yourself. And while you're there, get yourself a pair of everyday glasses that'll be sure to change your look for the better. When you wear Oakley, there really is more than meets the eye. Don't trust me? Try it for yourself. I've worn a lot of sunglass brands in my life, and I can assure you that Oakley is not only the best looking, but the best quality out there. Head on over to Oakley.com for more information today.
I think it is easier to have patience when you know you have the guy. And I think the Knicks right now, look, he may not be Nikola Jokic. He may not be even Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler is just insane. But Jalen Brunson, is he a guy or is he the guy? And I, after what we just witnessed in terms of, you know, this playoffs, like, do I think you could just surround Jalen Brunson with a bunch of role players and that's going to be enough? Like, no, I don't think that. I think that he is, first of all, he's a small man. And I think that it takes a toll on him to do what he does in a way that it might not take a toll on a guy like Jokic or even Jimmy Butler, who's built like a brick shit house. But like, So I think that part of it factors in, but I really do think, and this is the part that we really haven't talked about, and I just want to get your perspective and then we'll get out of here. Like, how big of a takeaway is it for you in this larger team building conversation we're having that we just saw what we saw from Jalen Brunson?
Oh, it's everything. I mean, I didn't have any doubt whatsoever that he was going to be a star of the playoffs because I've seen it, and there was nothing that he did in the regular season. It's not like, right? It's not like James Harden, where you're so reliant on step backs and getting to the free throw line and some antics that like it may not translate, right? Jalen Brunson plays heavy isolation basketball all the time. Like, he plays a playoff style in the regular season, and he is extremely good at it. So I had zero doubts. He may have even exceeded my expectations with what he did in that series with very little support. But I will say, him having no support is not divorced from his limitations.
That's
like
fair.
Like, what makes Jokic different and so a lot of things. That's a stupid intro to a sentence. Obviously, a lot of things make Jokic different. But like, what in terms of this contrast, you could put the same role players around and the Miami plays that same defense that they played, and Jokic is finding corner shooters with ease that are being abandoned. Now, the Knicks, they weren't making shots, but they weren't getting necessarily the best shots all the time for their best shooters. And Brunson just, he gets in his isolation zone. He's a certain size, and the best shot you're going to get sometimes is a Jalen Brunson pull-up, which is a really good shot. But that's the level that he's not quite at, which is I'm also simultaneously making all of my teammates better all the time. Now, that, again, is reserved for the very best players in basketball, like the top 5-6 players in the game that do that consistently. That he's not quite there. Now, is he, I think, like a solidified as like the top 20 guy? Yeah. To show me another guy who could put on that performance in the second round of playoffs against that defense. He's that good. He's that special. He is, if not the guy, he could be 1A. But like, yeah, he is that good. And I think both things are true. I think he solidified himself as that guy that you build around. And I think that's for sure the case. And I also think it showed you maybe where the difference is between that and then a guy like Jokic and even Jimmy to some extent, or in a different way. But Jimmy, I think, is able to create for others in a way that Brunson can't quite do.
And I do think that there was something just from a, like, I don't want to, you know, do the, yeah, I'll do it, the hashtag Heat culture standpoint. The fact that Jimmy Butler also is like just such a badass on the other end of the floor too. I do think that kind of like infects the water there, and it has a very positive effect on everything else that they do. So yeah, I mean, I think you just said it in like, you know, we're talking about there's different ways to skin a cat here. Really, the challenge for this front office, and I don't know if they're going to be able to, in fact, almost certainly will not be able to check all of these boxes this summer, is like, find the co-star that can amplify Brunson as opposed to, you know, not, you know, and I think that's maybe not that that's gonna be hard, but I, you know, it's like, you don't always get to pick and choose your star. And then once you have that, I think filling out the rest is probably going to be a little easier. But yeah, I do think that next step, it's a hard step. And, you know, we'll, and then that you'd said patience. That's where the patience comes in, because there's going to be a star and probably multiple stars that will come on the market this summer. Will it be the right star to put this guy next to this guy? And, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, it's also the patience of internal development, and like that's a balance, and the Knicks have to figure it out. It's not an easy decision to make if and when that trade or a trade or whatever comes onto their plates, if it's what they want to do. But you look again at the Denver model and you look at the Miami model, both teams, right? They have developed as well as anyone internally. You look at Porter, you look at Murray, And Murray's obviously, Jokic and the Knicks have plenty of young talent. Now, maybe not the blue chippers or as high draft picks as those Denver guys, but the Miami guys are freaking undrafted, half of them. And again, they're playing key roles in a likely finals bound team. So there's no one way to do it. I think the Knicks, the luxury the Knicks have is that there are probably multiple ways they can find it. It's about not making the wrong decision if it comes, because that could derail your process. Because right now,
yep,
there are a lot of avenues open to this team. And there really aren't any. Staying put is not a bad option right now. Like, you have a very good basketball team that you can develop and get better, and hopefully, and we'll talk about all of this at another time, but hopefully diversify a bit and be able to play in a couple different ways, so that come playoff time, you have some options when things aren't going on the offensive end. And then if guys get better and can kind of support an offense more successfully, and we're talking about our young guys, like, they could have won that series. Hell, it was a close series. Sure. And then who the hell knows? Yeah. So, like, it's not, they weren't far off this year.
No,
I mean, no, they weren't that far off. So
I'm happy you said that. Yeah.
You don't do anything rash where you derail everything that's open to you as a franchise, because right now you're in a really good spot. You have a superstar under contract, way under market. You have a lot of good young pieces out there that you can either develop internally or move at some point. So, like, it's just about being patient, jumping on the right opportunity if and when it arises. Don't make the wrong decision. I think that's the offseason. That's, for me, the offseason fear going forward here this summer, is like, don't do something stupid that derails a good thing that you have going.
And to bring it full circle and talk about a 10-year anniversary that I don't want to celebrate, don't trade for Andrea Bargnani.
Don't, please don't.
I don't know where Andrea Bargnani is, but
is that my next Twitter thread? Is the Andrea Bargnani debut breakdown?
Goodness, that was not fun. All right, you got to get out of here to play some actual basketball. Benji Ritholtz, you're the man. Anything before you go?
Just to shout out something I'm hoping to do once the finals hit is I'm hoping to, like, put out. I haven't decided exactly what it's going to look like yet, but put out kind of a, what can we learn from these teams as the Knicks? Like, what can we take from it? So I'm going to be putting out threads, hopefully after each game. We'll see. I don't know exactly how yet. I'm still thinking about kind of and brainstorming it, but keep an eye out for those, because I hope they'll be kind of educational and fun and interesting and a different way to watch the finals that can relate to this team. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, everybody should be excited for that. I'm excited for it. And I hope you were excited to listen to and enjoy another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. We will be back with you with more funny games very soon. Stay tuned. I think we got a live stream thing possibly with me coming tonight. So, yeah, check your Twitter feed for more information on that. Until then, we will talk to you soon. Peace out.
Stay mellow.